This is Harry Murray and Murray's Fly Shop in Edinburgh, Virginia. We're going to present our podcast for December of this year. A lot of our large streams all across the country do provide some better fishing in the winter than most people realize. I'm going to break this down into several categories so you can use it in the streams that you're fishing, whether it's a Jackson here in Virginia or whether it's a Madison in Montana. So I'm going to start out with a technique that I learned from Charlie Brooks out in West Yellowstone. Charlie and I were often fishing the Madison together, and if you know the Madison, the water up behind the barns, especially pole number two, that is typical of the kind of water Charlie liked to use these big nymphs I'm going to describe. And the technique that I'm going to tell you that he taught me out there and he used very effectively, it still, with all the techniques we've got today, it still is not fully understood. Brooks wrote about this in his book. Let me make sure I get that title right. Nymph Fishing for Larger Trout, I think was the name Charlie had for that. And in there, he's talking about, I think it was published in 76. And if you can get that, go for it. If you can't, call me, I'll talk you through it. What Brooks would do in this heavy water, now I'm talking about water that would be, 8-10 feet deep, running over basketball-sized boulders, pretty fast if you hold no number two up there back of the barns. I mean, it's fast water, deep water, and obviously would hold a lot of big browns and rainbows. Strangely enough, we do have some of that water here in the East Coast, some of it up in the Chateauguay in New York. Same technique I used up there. I was using what Brooks taught me out west. Piney and some of those streams up in there are pretty good like this. Okay, but anyway, let's get back to Brooks's method. What he would do, he'd break this down into about a five-step thing when he was teaching it and writing about it. He'd position himself about 20 feet upstream and 5 feet back from the bank of the deep run he suspected would be holding the trout. His first cast was about 15 feet up and across stream at about a 45-degree angle, and it would be about 6 feet out from the bank. Now, remember, he's got deep water right here in front of where he's standing, so he wants his nymph to drift down through there about 6 feet out from where he is on the first shot. All right, after he makes that cast, he lets that nymph sink very, very deeply on a slack line so that it'll reach the bottom close to the stream bottom right where he is standing. The next thing is what Brooks calls a control. Now, he's drifting that down beside him with his rod tip way up in the air, and it's swinging right along the bottom of the stream. Now, he'll lift his rod tip just a little bit, so he's only got a slight droop between the rod tip and the where the line enters the water. And he's swinging that right down beside him. Now, the next step is what Charlie calls his fishing phase. And he pivots his body as this is swinging down beside him at the rate that the nymphs are drifting along the bottom. Now, this is real critical. When I was learning this from Charlie, he was really on me to get a hold of that. With the nymphs drifting along the stream bottom, you're pivoting and turning your body, and I found it was easier to detect those strikes by feeling them than trying to see them on any part of the line or leader and all that type thing. Now, this is a very effective technique for big fish. From that same standing, Brooks would stay standing right there. He wouldn't let me move. We'd probably make about 10 casts up and across stream. Maybe each cast would be 2 or 3 feet longer until all of that water right beside you was covered. Any big browns, big rainbows lying down along there are going to see that nymph drifting right down beside them. And as I say, by staying tight to it like that, you never mend, no ever, ever mend, because then you get a strike, you don't even know it. So by staying tight to it, I find that with that Brooks method, I can feel those strikes pretty effectively. In fact, I recently used this out on the Madison, and it is very effective. Now, far as the line goes here, Brooks was very opinionated. If you knew him or if you read his books, you could tell. He didn't like the fly lines we had in those days. He made his own, I think it was about a 30 or 40 foot, non-tapered, almost lead head, which we'd call something like a scientific angler sink head, about 30 feet of it sinking on the market today. I use what I call the old high D head that Scientific Angler makes, and Brooks kind of tolerated me using that. So he's used a very fast sinking 30 or 40 foot head, gets down probably, if you had to measure, it'd be about 8 inches per second. And with that, you're going to use about a 5 foot leader. So if you use a long leader, you're defeating the purpose of that line. And swing that down through there. And as I say, we'd make about 20 casts from that station, then move on downstream about another 10 feet and repeat it. Well, you can see that this technique is going to show your fly to any big fish down there. And Brooks did catch a lot of big fish. He had a guide come out from Virginia one time to write a book about him. And after he left, I said, "Charlie, how'd you do?" He said, "I didn't want to be bothered catching the size fish that kid was fishing for." So Brooks was strictly a big fish hunter. But you ought to try to go back and grab his book on that. And if you have any trouble, I'll be glad to try to help you understand it. But it is effective, and I'm not aware of any other book that has this technique covered. Now, the flies he liked for us to use, he liked the six and eight long shank hooks. I still have some of the nymphs, stonefly nymphs he tied for me. But the flies you would know, I use a size 6 and 8 in the Bitch Creek nymph, the Murray's Olive Shrimp. I usually do go up to a 4 on the Olive Shrimp, and the Black Roadkill, Murray's Black Roadkill on a 6 and 8. Casual Dress Nymph, Polly Rosenberg's Casual Dress in about a 6 and 8 is very effective. Now, here in the East, very few of our rivers are as heavy as what Brooks is talking about in there. So I have kind of cheated a little bit on Charlie and gone to using a floating line, not sink tip or anything like that, a floating line with this method. And when I teach this in my classes and in my guide trips and all that, I call it swing nymphing. I'm using the same layout Brooks is using, but I'll use that floating line with a swing nymphing technique, and I'm casting up and across stream. Now here I'm using a 9 foot bright butt leader, and I place two scientific angler indicators in the butt section, one up in the butt and one in the next strand down. Now, I'm not using these indicators to detect the strike. I'm using these simply to let me evaluate what kind of depth I'm getting out of there. If you've been in any of my classes, you'll hear me right over your shoulder. There goes your first indicator. You've got good depth. There goes the bottom indicator. You're down in there good and deep. So I'm using these SA indicators to let me know when I've got my depth with those nymphs. First cast up and across stream, just like we said Brooks was doing, let them swing down through there, and you're pivoting your body, keeping a tight line between your line hand and that nymph with your rod held way up in the air, and you're pivoting your body and swinging right with it to maintain a tight line. Now, in this case, it is easy to feel that strike and zap, set the hook right away. I've had beginners who really have basically just picked up the fly rod, learn this technique in a matter of 15 minutes, and do very, very well in the fishing. Incidentally, we use this. I teach this in my smallmouth schools, and it's very effective. Now, on the trout streams here in the East, I'll probably use a little bit smaller flies than Brooks uses out west. Popular flies for me would be the Mr. Rapidan beadhead nymph and a 14, that would be meat and potatoes because we've got so many of those Zepros pluralis nymphs. Murray's dark stonefly nymph and a 12, Murray's caddis pupa and a 14, Murray's yellow stonefly nymph and a 14, and those are very effective. And I'm going to probably be using the Scott Radiant 9 foot rod that carries a number 6 line on that on the large streams out west. Here in the East, I'm going to probably use the Murray Mountain Trout Rod in that. But those are very, very effective techniques for big trout in big streams anywhere you're going. All right, let's talk about the smallmouth fishing that we have here throughout the country, but it's slowing down at this time of the year. So what I want to do now is talk about how you can design some flies for your smallmouth fishing in your area that might improve your catching. A lot of the flies we're using, in fact, I'd say 90% of the flies we use in our smallmouth fishing for our own use, our guides and our schools, are flies that we've designed here locally to meet our specific needs. So the logical way to come up with a fly that you want to design for your particular type water is to consider what type of the natural food in there. I mean, do you have sculpins? Do you have mad toms? Do you have crayfish? Do you have all the different minnows, different nymphs? Almost everybody's going to have crayfish and helgramites in there. So look at what you have. Consider what you might be able to do better on than the patterns we have out there. All right, after you have evaluated, let's say you want to do a better sculpin pattern. I'll have to say, many of the sculpin patterns that you can, if you follow the patterns over the last 10 years, you can tell many of the pretty sculpins are long gone because they just didn't catch fish. All right, so back to the drawing board here. So think about what you want. Then what I would do is look at the successful patterns that some of our past masters have come up with. Flies like Charlie Waterman, Ray Bergman, Old Tapley, H.G. Tapley of Old Tap's Tip. Look at the flies that they have designed for the specific type fishing they want to do in their area. This would give you a good starting point as to how they develop their flies. Now, then you're going to have to evaluate the materials on the market. This could be what you already have in your fly tying cabinet. It could be some of the old standard materials, some of the furs and all that. Maybe some of the new materials that have come on in the last 10 years. Look at the materials that are out there and then see what you think would work in tying your new patterns. For instance, on the Murray's Helgramite, it took me several years to come up with an effective pattern because I was approaching it incorrectly. I was simply trying to tie a fly that looked like a Helgramite, and it didn't work. I even had Dan Bailey get his girls to tie some for me out there in the old mossback patterns. Beautiful. I mean, beautiful work of art. They wouldn't even catch goggle eyes. So I really had to go back to the stream bottom. Take some helgramites, toss them in the stream, see how they acted in the stream, and right away I could tell why the existing helgramite patterns didn't work. The real helgramite, the larva of the Dobson fly, is when you toss him in the stream, he's going to swim downstream with a very pronounced undulating type motion. Well, none of them came close to that. Back in those days, Abercrombie and Fitch was the biggest tackle shop in the East Coast. I had the most beautiful helgramites Abercrombie could come up with. They did not catch fish. And it wasn't until Ron Colmer came up with his ostrich herald stuff that he was playing with for Muskie that I incorporated that and old Charlie Brooks is in the round that we came up with the fly that we now know as Murray's Helgramite, which is a fish-catching machine. So you can do this. Look at the strengths, how we developed the strength. We just did trial and error. The Magnum Streamer series, the Hogsucker, the bass rolling Hogsucker up on the bank right beside me. I thought that's got to be a way to catch big fish. So I'll come back and try to develop something that looks like the Hogsucker. The day Jeff and I were on the South Fork, hitting it late in the evening, and Jeff was rowing back to take out at the dock, and I was fishing a streamer there, and lo and behold, a bluegill jumps on it. Well, 5 feet from the boat, a large smallmouth bass thought that looked like good to eat, so he grabs that bluegill. Well, that was all I needed. So then I come back and try to concoct a bluegill. And you can easily come up with these. Now, when you're going to have to develop tying techniques that would let you vary the materials a little bit. Maybe you're on your Hogsucker. Use one type olive, a dark olive, a light olive, a medium olive, but experiment back and forth and go take them to the stream and fish them and see what works. And old Charlie, oh no, that was Vince Marinaro, had this game of nods where he would take materials from one fly and blend them in with another and blend them in with another, and then finally come up with something that works. Now, in that vein, though, on tying techniques, when you're tying streamers, I think it's very important to keep them sparse. Two reasons. One, they will certainly cast better than a big, bulky fly. Second, they will certainly sink better. And even if you're putting cone heads on them or barbell eyes, a more streamlined fly, like the old Brooks Blonde, that's a perfect example. Streamlined flies are going to sink better, they're going to cast better, and all that. Now, if you're tying surface bugs, frogs, mice, all those, there's some out there that really look like the real thing. But hold down on the appendages, the pinchers, the legs, all that. For one thing, if you overdo the legs, we'll say, on a crayfish and it twists a leader, you get a little kind of mini knot on your leader, almost like a little half hitch that you don't even see is out there on your tippet. You hit a big bass and snap it off right in his jaw. So experiment with those and try to come up with some patterns that you feel are effective in your home water, and I think you'll really enjoy your fishing and your fly tying a whole lot better. If you have any questions on any of this, just ring me at the fly shop in Edinburgh, and that's 540-984-4212. That's in Edinburgh, and through the winter, I think I've still got three or four more fly tying classes going on if anybody wants to get in those. But just ring me if you have any questions, and I'll be glad to help you. Thank you very much.